All right, we got Richard on the line. Yeah, I'm your host, engineer, and everything else for Radio Mysterioso. We got Richard on the line. Let's play the opening theme here, and then we'll be on here with Richard Sennett.
We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
Yeah, it's Radio Mysterioso here for November 20th of 11. And as promised twice, mainly my fault on the delay, is Mr. Richard Sennett. He's been on the show once before. And as he said on the show before, he's been hunting ghosts ever since a personal experience at one of the California missions back in 1978. So that's over 30 years. I took a ghost hunting class from him, like, I think in around 2006. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about the art and craft of stalking ghosts. Richard Sennett's also a historian of California history, at least. We'll get into that a little bit with him. A lot of books. Most of his books are about the ghost hunting, I believe. Books like Ghost of the Haunted Coast, The Haunted Southland, Haunted Ventura, Ghost Stalker's Guide to Haunted California, and at least two fiction books, one which I'll have to ask him about, the two recent ones, Flight of the Hercules and a collection of short stories entitled Steam.
It's titled Thrilling Tales.
It's in the Age of Steam. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was wrong. Totally wrong. So if we plug him in here.
It's probably partially my fault in the cover design. The biggest word on the cover is Steam.
Yeah. Richard, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. We have a bad connection, so I'll do my level best to try to understand what you're saying and answer your questions. Yeah, it's called The Thrilling Adventures from the Age of Steam. It's a collection of novellas about the steampunk movement and early classical kinds of science fiction. And that can be found on lostcontinent.com. They're one of my many publishers.
Richard, it's amazon.com is the best place to find it.
Oh, it's also Amazon, too.
Yeah, but the blog is lostcontinentlibrary.blogspot.com, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then I have another one, which is on lulu.com. And you can also get that on Lost Continent. It's called The Flight of the Hercules. And they're all about 19th century kind of science fiction things. And it's something I like to do almost like a hobby to sort of escape from all of the ghosts and paranormal things. I like to go back in time and write about a world very removed from our own where anything was quite possible.
Yeah, it's funny you say, well, you like to back off and do something that interests you. Usually that's the ghost hunting thing for most people. So actually your fiction writing, is there any bearing on your fiction writing of the ghost stuff, or is it kind of separate up to now?
It's separate at this point in time, but my publisher has told me he wants to see a steampunk version of ghost hunting. And I've been kicking around a new story idea about a 1895 guy who calls himself a phantomologist and studies phantoms, and how he gets involved in a case in Haiti, the island republic, and has encounters with ghosts, zombies, or you name it. So I'm still doing that. And so eventually the two might merge, but they haven't so far, not as yet.
Oh, okay. But what attracts you to the 19th century, to that, or, well, either the 19th or the turn of the century, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always loved that period of history. Another thing I've really loved is the American Civil War, and I'm working on a book right now. It's in the second rewrite, and it's called The Flight, The Pride of Dixie is the name of it. It's again about a balloon called The Pride of Dixie.
Yeah, because the I think the first story in the Age of Steam is set in the Civil War.
Yeah, that was a short story that I wrote actually some time ago. And it's the shortest story in the book of compilations, but it's one I kind of like. And it's called To Win a War, and it's about a man who builds a steam-powered tank for the Civil War. And, of course, it's all kind of fantasy stuff, but it's a lot of fun. And a lot of people seem to really like that short story more than some of the longer pieces I have.
It sounds, reading it, it sounded like a, basically like a script for a Twilight Zone, actually.
Yeah, it does kind of sound a little like that. Of course,
reads
I loved
like
Twilight Zone when
yeah.
I was a kid. Oh, yeah, those, by the way, can be downloaded for onto Kindle for like 99 cents.
Yep.
So it's like nobody's going to go broke buying my books, I can tell you that.
At least that one, and that's the newest one. Walter, is there is something?
Well, and I'll tell you, they won't go broke buying it, and they sure as hell won't go bored reading it. So
oh,
seriously.
Oh, well, thank you. But no, I do that. And of course, I'm always still doing investigations, and I'm going out. In fact, I was out last night at about this time at a haunted cemetery. And I was freezing my tail off, but we did have some weird things happen, and we got some unique photographs. So the ghost hunt was a success, but almost died of frostbite doing it.
where was the cemetery? Can you not reveal it at the time?
It's in Ojai, California, a little town north of where I live in Ventura, and it's a haven for movie stars and creative arts people and directors. In fact, Tim Burton had a house up there for many years, stuff like that. So it's a great place, kind of an artistic community. And yes, it's really well haunted. And many of the fancy mansions up there have as many ghosts as you might find in an English manor or castle.
Damn it, Richard, I was there for a week. And you knew I was there, and I should have called and said, do you have time to come up? Maybe we can drive around Ojai. Because I was house-sitting there for a week. I wrote you when I was there. And I don't know a lot of the history of Ojai, especially the haunted history, except for Creek Road, which, of course, that a lot of people know about.
Oh, Creek Road is very infamous. But you know the best place to go is a museum in the middle of town. It's built on the site of an old church. And the museum is actually haunted, too, by a ghost nun. Ooh. And we have all kinds of information about the cemetery and about the people buried there, and even some of the ghost stories. And in fact, one of the books I've written is called, remarkably, Ghosts of the Ojai.
Yes.
And it's about the Ojai Valley and everything around there. But no, it's a very, very sacred spot to Native Americans, and lots of different ghost stories all linked to the Ojai Valley.
Yeah, I wish I'd known more of them or had that book. I've got the Haunted Southland book and the Southern Ghost of the Southern Coast, I think it was.
The Ghost of the Haunted Coast.
The Haunted Coast, yes. That's one I've got. I didn't take them with it. Next time I'll just ask you, and I will offer you breakfast or lunch or dinner.
That's a way to get into good graces with me. Just give me some food. We'll work for cupcakes, you know.
All right. Well, then I'll invite you next time. Did you remember we had this interview, I think, in 2006? On this show, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to that before we did the show. There will probably be some repeat here. And I hate to do it, but maybe you can give a shortened version of how you got interested in the first place. Your encounter at the Mission in 1978 and how that affected you.
It affected me profoundly. If you would have gone up to me prior to that event and said, "Oh, you're going to hunt ghosts and become very well known as a ghost hunter," I would have just laughed and fallen on my floor. I couldn't imagine it. It's not something that was possible. I was going to become an archaeologist, and that was my focal point, a California archaeology, Southwestern archaeology. Mm-hmm. And though I was writing, I wrote novels, science fiction, stuff like that, starting in the 10th grade. So I was still writing, but I didn't do anything with ghosts. Ghosts were just verboten until I was up late one night in 1978 in the summer, and I walked into the courtyard of the Mission with the goal of going to the kitchen and raiding the refrigerator for some cold chicken. And it was about 12:30 at night. And as I was walking through, I saw something off out of the corner of my eye. I looked, and it looked like a candle. And as it was walking parallel to me, I changed course to kind of intercept it, and I could see it was a monk with a robe and a hood and a candle in his hand, a little holder thing. Well, remarkably, that didn't scare me because there's still an active monastery, or at least it was back then. And so I figured, oh, one of the brothers is up. Maybe I could talk him into a midnight snack. Well, I got up to it about 10 feet, and bam, it disappeared. It just wasn't there. It didn't slowly dissolve. It didn't blow out with a big flash. It just was there, and it wasn't there. And I stood there with my mouth open. What in the world had I seen? And I'd seen it for well over 2 minutes. I knew that.
Yeah.
I knew I hadn't imagined it. By the way, I lost my appetite. And once I realized I had seen a ghost, I went back to my room and tried to sleep, which I couldn't. But the next day, I talked to the monks who lived there, and they confirmed that other ghosts had been seen there, including a member of their order who had passed away, who always walked through the courtyard on his way to the church for extra prayers, carrying a candle. So I had encountered this monk, and that's what started me trying to figure out what in the world these ghosts are. And I've been all over the world. I've talked to some of the leading experts, from Dr. Hans Holzer all the way down to D. Scott Rogo, you name it, I've talked to him. And I've investigated haunted places in England and the Southwest and, New Orleans and New England, all sorts of different things. And I'm still out there searching, trying to find answers.
What do you think that we're going to short circuit what the end might be? But what do you think that might be? Do you have any idea?
Of what?
Some sort of theory behind the hauntings and ghosts, because I figure we're going to go over what types there are, is this commonly accepted, what types, mm-hmm. what causes them maybe, have you come to any conclusion after all this? Like, it's actually dead people, or it's time slips, or
Well, I don't believe that there is one explanation. I used to think that was the answer, that we'd find this one kind of a theory that would sort of unify the whole thing. But I've given that up. I think that ghosts actually are not one thing, but several different phenomena. a good chunk of them are actually what I call bleed-throughs in the fabric of time. When we see a ghost, maybe we're simply looking back to the past and seeing a real event. It's a theory I've held that some ghosts are that. Other ghosts might be leftover emotional traces. Someone who's been murdered, tortured, under great stress, might leave some emotional trace behind that we can pick up on. Mm-hmm. In fact, that might explain the fact that many ghosts seen are people who are still alive. How do you account for that? So it could be that these emotional traces are what we're picking up. Then there's other theories that ghosts might be what everyone has long suspected of spirits of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly enough, in my research, I found that that's a minority of the events. Maybe only 20% are recognizable people who have passed on. Just 20%. Now, what about the other 80%? How do you account for them? Or you think that's strange? What about people who see characters from fiction?
Uh-huh.
You know, people who never lived, like Tom Sawyer,
yeah,
or Sherlock Holmes. He's just seen as a ghost, but he never lived. So how do you explain that?
Hey, Richard, you bring up something really a really interesting point. Isn't there a story that Walter Gibson actually saw the shadow, either before or after he had started writing him?
Oh, yeah. Now, he didn't see it, but because he was a magician, a good friend. He wrote a book on Life of Houdini, a very skeptical fellow.
Mm-hmm.
But he hammered out these short stories, or actually there were novels, novellas, 1 month. And he grew to hate the shadow he created, just like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle hated Sherlock Holmes. And he would hammer him out quick. After he left the house where he had rented, people started to see this phantom figure, all in black with a slouch hat and a big cape. So it could be, again, the emotional release of hammering these stories out under such great pressure left something behind. And that's what these people are picking up on. So it could very well be that ghosts are projections of our own minds. In other words, our minds may be so powerful that we can create a ghost. And if enough people think about seeing a ghostly figure, well, that will somehow become manifest and people will see it. So our minds may be far more powerful than we even imagine. If enough people get together, maybe we could create, well, quite literally anything. And theories like that also might account for sightings of Bigfoot or UFOs or who knows what. But there's a lot we don't know about this phenomenon. I do not have all the answers. All I have are a bunch of theories. And I'm trying to get more proof, more evidence, develop more tests to see if we can finally get an idea of what ghosts are, even if it doesn't explain all ghosts, even if it just explains a few, it could do a lot to unmask this great mystery.
Yeah, well, you're up against a huge problem, too, because nobody can really, well, unless you can contradict this, nobody can really create a ghost or a haunting that I've heard of. They can make people think, I think, that they've seen some sort of phantom or hallucination, but not something where it's externalized on demand for more than one person. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, there is a great book called The Conjuring of Philip.
Oh, yes. We've talked about that. Yeah.
And they, a group of people at Toronto, literally created a ghost they call Philip. And they had recordable phenomenon, both items moving, sounds manifest, that might have been this created ghost. Of course, those who are skeptical said that their efforts only attracted a real ghost to come. Or, we don't know. Again, as I say, we don't have all the answers. And this is, as I say, a theory that might explain some ghostly behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had more evidence. If I did, I certainly would come out with a paper or I would submit it. There are great contests out there, like the one in England with the British Society for Psychical Research. if I figured something out, I would certainly submit it to them because I could use some money on the prize.
Hey, Richard, in
so could we all,
Richard?
No, I'm still out there theorizing and hoping that maybe we can find an answer someday.
Hey, Richard, on the issue of other people seeing ghosts that you create. In Magic and Mystery in Tibet, didn't Alexandra Neely say that other people saw a tulpa created by someone?
What was that again?
Walter said that he was referring to Magic and Mystery in Tibet, the book by Alexandra David Neal, where she wandered through Tibet in the early 20th century disguised as a Tibetan and actually wrote about the phenomenon of tulpas and said that she and people she known had created them and they had actually appeared to other people. But that's the only place I've so far I've heard of where somebody's actually reported to have done that and in that much detail anyway.
Well, that sounds exactly what I'm saying. It's something mystics have talked about for many ages, but I think that may actually exist even amongst people who aren't consciously trying to create a ghost, but not people think about it. It might actually, I believe, cause something to happen, a projection of a living mind. Now, I've seen a lot of things like this, bizarre, weird stuff linked to poltergeist cases, where we have, you know, the rudimentary movement of objects, you know, things flying through the air, you know, tables moving, things being disrupted, bottles broken. But actually, there's also a minority of events that are poltergeist hunting, but it actually has apparitions. And these are bizarre apparitions, from glowing bunny rabbits to dancing clowns to you name it. But these don't appear to be the kind of ghosts that one finds associated with a haunted house. The dancing clown was in a place where there were no circuses, no accounts for why a clown would be seen at that particular house. It could be that the living mind, the focus in the poltergeist case, has somehow projected this image out into space and other people have in fact encountered it. It's not something they did on purpose. It's something they did subconsciously.
Or is maybe you're suggesting a focus for some kind of... Well, I guess the energy is coming from them and that allows whatever is in the environment to manifest or whatever is in their subconscious. I mean, that's come up many times. Is there the focus of poltergeist cases, they always seem to be sort of disturbed people or conflicted people?
Oh, usually always. In fact, most haunted places, the people who live in them are not happy folks. They're usually undergoing some kind of a crisis of some sort going on. And when you have a poltergeist, that's manifest as even greater confusion, problems. And usually the focus is always a very creative individual. It's a quiet person, above average in intelligence, and they're expressing themselves paranormally in a way they can't do physically.
Have you encountered this in your research? You must have, because I've never heard about people manifesting, externalizing things or things that people can see. I've only heard about the flying objects.
Oh, yes, I have. I've encountered them. In fact, the clown was an interesting one. This lady and her husband got a divorce, and she kept her two kids, and one was a little boy who was about six, and then the little girl was nine, and they stayed in the house. The husband left, and she stayed with the dog. They had a big German Shepherd, and they had a lot of weird stuff happen, typical poltergeist things. I mean, items moving, things being tossed in the kitchen, pictures coming off the walls, that kind of stuff. But the thing that was really bizarre, the wife woke up in the middle of the night. On her bed was the dog sleeping. She saw a light in the hallway because the door was open, and the light seemed to swirl around like a million fireflies. Then they condensed down into this clown with a funny hat and a red nose, big shoes, a red vest, and he was dancing in the hallway. No music, just dancing. And the dog woke up too, looked at it, and then rolled over and went back to sleep. That's kind of interesting. And this was a big, mean dog. I remember, and finally the whole thing just disappeared. You know, it just turned back into, like, points of light and vanished. She called me up the next day. I brought in a very great psychic I was working with at that time, a lady named Gertie Horick. And she came with a pair of dowsing rods. I told her absolutely nothing. I didn't even give her the address or the name of the folks. There's no way she could have researched it. So I drove her out there myself. She didn't get a chance to go there early or anything. She walked in, and using her little dowsing rod, she pointed out that something happened right here. And that was exactly where the clown appeared. And the mother was there. I instructed the mother not to say or do anything that might give her information. Then the psychic rods went into the little boy's room. She went to the third drawer, a chest of drawers in the room, pulled it out, reached in, and pulled out a little toy clown.
Huh.
About 5 inches tall, or 4 inches tall, with a red vest and big shoes and a hat. The whole works. Now, it is theorized that the young boy projected his version of happiness. He wanted happiness for his family. Because it was being ripped apart by this divorce. And his symbolism for that was a clown dancing, which, of course, caused more problems than anything else. But once we got to the core of what was bothering the young boy, oddly enough, everything stopped.
Yeah, that's not odd at all. What did the boy think of all this?
Well, we didn't present him with all the information. Obviously, he's too young to, take that in and do anything with it. So we asked him to talk about his, his feelings and talk with his mother. We told her to spend more time with her son and her daughter and have them draw or something like that. And if she wanted to seek counseling, I gave her the name of a good counselor I knew who was receptive to ghosts and the paranormal.
Yeah.
Many of them are not.
Yeah.
And someone who just wouldn't prescribe a bunch of pills or something like that. Someone who would really listen to what the kids had to say. So it was a good, successful case. We really did well on that.
That's good that has a happy ending, because usually it just kind of peters itself out, but in the midst of a lot of, as I've heard and read and talked to people, in the midst of a lot of trauma and problems and all that. And it's nice that you could get that one resolved.
Well, that was an exception. Most of the time, as you have so accurately described, they just sort of mysteriously come and then mysteriously go. But with poltergeists, you have to realize that they're all working out problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you find out what that problem is and solve it, the poltergeist will go away.
Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned and it made me think was you said you referred them to a professional who was not bothered by the phenomena. And so in a larger sense, I think I know what you might be, the reaction might be, but when you come up against officialdom and most people that are in, I guess, authoritative positions, I guess they're kind of hostile to it. That's been your experience, I guess.
Well, some are and some aren't. I'm a local yokel here, and I've been here all my life, so I know a lot of the people, and I have a reputation. In fact, it's kind of the reverse around here. Many times the police will actually tell people to call me up. One particular lady kept calling and saying there were intruders in her house. She lived in this big old Victorian home. She'd hear the doors open and footsteps and stuff like that, screams, all kinds of junk. And she'd call the cops and lock herself in the bathroom. They'd come, even with dogs, they never found a dang thing. Finally, after the fourth visit, they gave her my number and said, call this man. You have a ghost. And by the way, they did. And we actually got to the bottom of that one and found the builder of the house have been caught embezzling and gone into his attic office and blown his brains out. And this was a reenactment of that tragedy.
Oh, I see. You know, I'm reading a book on hauntings and things like that right now by another researcher. The guy that's going to be on next week, Barry Taff, who you probably know.
Oh, he's an old friend of mine. Dr. Taft goes out and does all sorts of good stuff. We worked together in the early years, and he's been a great associate over the years. He's helped me out of a few cases, and I've helped him several times. So he's a wonderful man. He'll make a great guest for you.
Yeah, well, I've talked to him three times now since before the show, and I'll start talking to him. You know, we're confirming the show time, and we're on the phone for like an hour and a half.
Easy to do.
Yeah, he just start all the stories and theories start pouring out. I'm afraid we're going to have to repeat it when we're on the air. I took a few notes, but reading his book, I noticed that some of the things that he's investigated, I thought of something that happened to me personally. Because you keep, a lot of people think in their lives, oh, nothing's happened to me. And I don't really think so. But then I think I lived in this house in Topanga Canyon for a while. And, you know, it was fine. I wasn't the happiest person for the longest time. So maybe this was part of it, too. When I was there, when I was alone, one time I walked into the kitchen and all the drawers were opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't hear the drawers open. The funny thing was they were not opened in a random fashion. They were opened as if there were stairs. The bottom one was opened a lot. The second one was open a little bit less, and the top one was open not much at all.
Okay, like you know what that is, don't you?
No.
That is a poltergeist phenomenon. It is something your supernatural aid, your subconscious mind, something was telling you you had to get out of there and climb out of whatever you were in at that time, whatever crisis it was. I would dare say it was a relationship of some kind.
It was. It was, actually. It was unrequited love. But
I have had so many cases. In fact, that reminds me of a case of a lady I investigated in Long Beach. She was a student at the university there, and she would have all kinds of phenomena. It was all linked to the fact that her high school sweetheart wanted her to marry him and come back to the little town where she grew up, and he would run his father's feed store, and she would stay home and have 16 children or something like that. And she just didn't want to do that, but she didn't want to face up to the fact that, tell the guy that it wasn't going to happen. And she had this interesting thing. Her drawers opened up like you described, and her socks flew out of the drawer, but they fell in an interesting pattern. Huh. They formed a line across the bedroom to the window, and then the window opened, like saying, get out. And this happened just before her boyfriend came for a visit. Well, when she finally broke up with him, it all stopped. All the events were worked out, and she, of course, no longer needed any supernatural guide to realize that her direction wasn't in her small town. But I think she went on to become a veterinarian and now working in San Diego. So it too had a happy ending.
Yeah, well, you wish that it would be that obvious for a lot of people. The other funny thing, that didn't happen while I was watching. I just walked into the kitchen and I said, who opened the drawers? And the other funny thing is I wasn't startled by it. I just thought, oh, there must be something going on in this house. And then I just closed the drawers. The other funny thing...
more and more, yeah. I've gotten that same response. They have weird stuff happen, and yet it's all like, oh, well, that's okay. That's normal. Over and over, I've heard this. The same thing that you're talking about. I just had an interesting case, a classic example of crisis apparition. To all my more favorite kinds of apparitions. A lady lives in New Jersey. She's a bank manager over in Thousand Oaks. They transferred her out here from New York. Actually, she went to New York and then California.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, she woke up out of a sound sleep, and there was a blue light in the hallway. And as she watched, sitting up in bed, this blue ball about the size of a basketball floated into her room right next to her bed. And out of the blue ball came the voice of her brother, Jimmy, who said, "I just came to tell you I'm all right, that everything is the way it should be." Then the ball turned around and left, and she wasn't frightened. I got to tell you this. A blue ball flies into my bedroom in the middle of the night. I'm going to be pretty upset about this. I'm going to be worried or something. She goes back to sleep. Next morning, she finds out her brother had been killed that very night. She went back to the funeral. And wouldn't you know it, her sister was there. And her sister lives in New York. And her sister told her on the night Jimmy died, she had this strange thing. A ball came floating into her living room or into her bedroom. And out of it came a voice saying, "Everything is all right." And it was Jimmy's voice.
Yeah.
She had the same dream, even though one was in New York and the other was in California. Oh, by the way, when the man's, her brother's biker buddies came to the house, they brought with them what was left of his customized Harley. It was painted a light blue.
Ah, of course.
So similar to the what she saw in the ball.
Amazing. And the thing that reminded me when I was reading Dr. Taft's book was the oft-reported sound of scratching, as if there's some horrible animal running around the walls of your house and between the walls. I had that, and it happened over months, and I thought it was just some animal. And I could hear it in the wall scratching. I could put my hand on the wall and feel it. And if I put my ear to the wall, I could actually hear the squeaking noise like there was some kind of weird animal or rat. Maybe it was a rat or raccoon, but I've always assumed it was some kind of animal running around in the walls. But, you know, do animals do that? Do they scratch like mad on the walls as up and down and across the ceiling and all that?
Well, I actually investigated a case where we had a number of phenomena of which what you described was one of them. But I pulled out part of a heating vent, and it was a cat that got stuck in there. So we were able to find a real explanation for that event. But a lot of things, what people pass for a normal event, or they pass off as mice or you name it, I think may well have a supernatural base. So we may actually have ghosts come that we may not even recognize them as ghosts. I think there's a lot, too. We have to enter every case with an open mind. And what I've found is no two cases are really alike. Everyone has its own unique and special signature.
Well, surprise, surprise. It's just like UFO sightings. Yeah, so what's going on? I think people are as individual as, I mean, they're as individual as people are, it seems.
Right, and that's what I tell people. And even though this doesn't go along with all my theories, I tell many of my students that ghosts are people who just happen to be dead. And as a person, they still retain all of their own individual quirks and their own strange things that made them unique. So it's no wonder that every ghost is a little bit different.
Hey, Richard, have you ever done any ghost hunting in association with ley lines?
Ley lines? Oh, yes, I have. And I've got I have a lot of friends from England. We communicate back and forth from Great Britain. And they are really hot on ley lines over there and dowsing rods. And they kind of turned me on to dowsing. And I have found lines of energy that seem to correspond to haunted locations.
Ah,
see, they
really
believe that if these ley lines, where they meet, is something called a node.
Yeah.
And where you have a node, it enhances psychic gifts. So you may not have a lot of psychic gifts, but you walk into that node and you'll be able to see ghosts, pick up things that you ordinarily wouldn't. And so I have found that many of the cases I've investigated do seem to have that link to ley lines or whatever they are, these lines of energy that seem to grid the whole planet.
How do you determine where these lines are? Or do you just kind of find them by, do you map them, or do you find them from other people, or how do you?
Oh, it's easy. That's the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, really?
As a historian, it's not hard for me. First, I got a big map, and then I marked on the map all of the churches and religious sites.
Yeah.
I put them down, little dots in red, and I put little dots in blue, places where we had repeated psychic events, like haunted houses, where you had more than one encounter. Put them down, and as I looked at the map, a pattern began to form. Yeah. Finally, I got a big yardstick and started to play connect the dots, and I was appalled at what I found. There's a building in Ventura County. It's a little town called Santa Paula.
Yeah, I know
very,
it.
Very haunted place. It's an old inn built in 1911 called the Glen Tavern Inn.
Oh,
for
yes.
For my money, it's one of the most haunted places around. I did this ley line thing, and when I finally got to linking up all the dots, I was shocked and amazed to find all of the lines converged on the lobby of the Glen Tavern Inn. And it's like Spook Central. Now, theories in England say that ghosts can travel on the ley lines. And no wonder where they meet. This is kind of like a Grand Central Station or something like that. But there are new phenomena coming out of the Glen Tavern Inn. By the way, I haven't shared that information about the ley lines with the people who own the inn, but they have so much stuff happening there that
wouldn't be surprised.
Used to it.
They probably wouldn't be surprised. I had one other question about it, and this is based on some of Dr. Taft's stuff and Michael Persinger and a few other, and who's the guy in England?
John Bull.
No.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
I was trying to think of the other guy. I can't remember his name. Anyway, but part of their theories include geographic, physical Earth features that might be part of this, including things like fault lines and things like that. Have you looked at a map of fault lines of Ventura County and see if there's any?
Oh, yes, very much. In fact, all of California is no wonder. According to some of the theories, and I've been working with a researcher in Norway, of all places, and some in Scotland, that indicate that ghosts might be linked to earthquakes. See, while we are just talking, there are little unknown earthquakes happening deep within the Earth. These are like 1.1 magnitude. We don't even feel them.
Yeah.
But they release electromagnetic energy. And we may pick this electromagnetic energy up, and that might enhance our own natural psychic gifts that cause us to be more able to see or experience ghosts or leftover energies or visions from the past or any number of things. So he was trying to put a link between these little earthquakes and the sightings of ghosts to see if we could actually make up a pattern and be able to predict where ghosts will be seen.
Yeah.
Well, we worked on that for a year. We were never able to come up with anything conclusive. But I think there may well be some kind of a link. I have found strong electromagnetic readings at places that are haunted. I've found other places where they have a lot of electrical equipment, like radio stations, for instance. Many of them are haunted. Same with TV stations as well. They're surrounded with all this electronic equipment.
Another ghost.
I tend to think that somehow stimulates things to happen. But again, that's a theory.
I think you're right. You just reminded me of the other ghost thing that happened to me. I was working at 2 in the morning at a post-production house right in the middle of Hollywood. And there was a hallway that went all the way around the building, and there were no windows to the outside of the building or doors that went out of the offices that came off this hallway. And at 2 in the morning, I'm walking through there, and I hear one of the doors close. And there's one other guy in the building besides me. So I go and look, and there's nobody in the room. as if somebody's gone in the room and closed the door, come out of the room and closed the door, but I would have seen them walking down the hall. Because it was the first, and when I got to the corner, it happened to the next one. And it kept doing that as I went around the corners. And it wasn't the guy there. He was in another room. And he said, oh, that's happened to me. I'm not coming out of my room. And he locked the door that he was in. And then somebody else told me they had seen somebody coming up the stairs more than once who said he had this big white guy afro, frizzy hair, and a kind of a rainbow T-shirt like he was from the 70s. And he'd come up to the top of the stairs there and disappear. And I had never heard that until I came up with this story about the doors closing.
Did he have a big John 3:16 sign, too?
No.
Oh, wait, that guy, it's rainbow hair. And,
yeah.
Well, you see, you know what I'd like to do? If I had the money, I have so many experiments I'd like to try. But again, I don't have the resources. You know what I'd do is I would make a list of every radio station in the Los Angeles basin. Mm-hmm. And then I would call each and every one of them up and see if I could ask them, try to find their employees, their people, and ask them, is your radio station haunted? And try to do a survey, how many of those radio stations really do have ghosts? I would bet you it's almost 100%.
Huh. Is that based on what you've heard in the past?
Yeah, based on what I've heard from DJs, I've been interviewed by my people who work at radio stations or in TV and radio, who, you know, after the show is over, we're chatting. Oh, yeah, we've got a ghost here. Oh, yeah, I worked at this other place. Yeah, there was a ghost there. And they all have these different stories. So I tend to think that might be a pattern of some sort.
that's fascinating that there would be external amplifiers to something that's maybe it just permeates everything, and it's just like you said, maybe there's amplifiers like a ley line or an earthquake fault or a radio station. You know, what if you've got an earthquake fault underneath a radio station? I guess it would be like
got a lot. Another
about
thing
the inn.
Every Hollywood studio has ghosts, no exceptions. They all have ghosts. Now they may not want to talk about their ghosts, but I've done enough investigating down in the film capital that I know that I can categorically say that every studio has at least one, if not many more, haunting them.
Yeah, and that goes for theaters, too, live theaters. I hear that quite a bit, too.
Live theaters. And even a few movie houses or places that are used as both. So I found a lot of it. And I think a lot of that may have to do with the what a person has to do to become an actor, a successful actor. I think you have to have a really incredible drive. You've got to be emotionally ready for it. In fact, I almost believe that to be a good actor, you have to have sort of like a mental illness. Something incomplete in your life that makes you strive to get the accolades that you may not have gotten at home. That's a little armchair psychiatry. But I think that the actors and their creative talents have left things behind, and that might account for why theaters, studios, all have their own ghostly residents.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense, and it ties in with the what we were talking about with people that were focal points for poltergeist activity. There's some kind of emotional thing going on, some kind of, like you said, unfinished business, and that seems to potentiate whatever's going on.
Well, I also, well, of course, I have a good link to that. My family moved to Hollywood back in the 20s, and they actually helped to make silent films. And continue to write through talkies. In fact, some of my family members are still working in the industry. So I collected my Hollywood ghost stories literally around the dining room table. And at Christmas parties, they'd say, oh, I was over on soundstage such and such at the MGM lot and stuff like that. And they would tell me about this encounter and stuff like that. I even had one of my aunts claim to have encountered the ghost of Rudolph Valentino, who's been seen all over Hollywood, and all kinds of these different stories. So that was one of some of my first ghost yarns I had, was when I was growing up, just hearing these stories about the studios and the sound stages or dressing rooms of the major studios in Hollywood.
That, it's funny you bring that up about Valentino, because I noticed on one of your sites, and also I remember from the class, two things. One, that Valentino haunts that the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And two, something you said that made a lot of sense, that cemeteries are probably one of the least haunted places of all, because nothing happens there.
True.
It's just dead people.
Yeah, and there's no link. Now, he did, you know, with a spot he's buried at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, he did visit that spot. That was this lady, the screenwriter, Mathis. That was where her mother was buried.
Hmm.
And she had a space next to her mother where she was going to be buried. And when, of course, Valentino died so abruptly, she gave up her place, her tomb, and gave it to him.
Wow.
So he did actually visit the site before his own demise. Also, he's just seen all over the place, a lot of it at the Paramount Studios lot, and at the Musso and Frank's restaurant. And plus, his home over in Beverly Hills has recently been torn down.
Hmm.
Yeah, they tore down the house, and it was a 16-room mansion where his ghost was seen. But that's where he used to throw some really wild parties. And
I bet.
I collected a lot of stories about Valentino, about his life, which was short, but he put more life into his life than most people who lived for many decades.
Yeah.
He certainly did have his way. Wasn't a very happy life, though, but he seems to be coming back almost like he's got some sort of mission. So for some reason, he's coming back maybe to finish a movie or that he had planned out, maybe to reconcile with his second wife or maybe to marry his girlfriend. I have no idea what it is. But there's a lot of weird stuff about Valentino and the way he died. And there's a lot of mystery about that. He just didn't have a stomach problem or dropped dead at the age of 31, even back then. There was certainly lots of rumor that somebody might have dug him in.
Mm.
But he's still seen. I'm talking about not a long time ago, but in the last couple of years he's been seen, even though he died back in 1926.
Yeah,
really, the same year as Harry Houdini.
Why? That's a great question. So he alone is worth a study. In fact, I call Valentino the ghost of Hollywood because he's been seen all over the place there.
Hey, Richard, is the place where Marilyn Monroe died, is that haunted?
What was that again?
The house in Brentwood where Marilyn Monroe died on that little street. Walter's asking if that you've ever gotten a report or heard about a report of that being haunted.
I've wanted to go there. I could never get permission, so I've never had a chance to investigate. And I haven't heard anything about it being haunted, but I think it is. And I think there's a good possibility, and many of the psychic people I've talked to and other reporters I've talked to as well, and people who knew Marilyn Monroe even, both said that she was not the kind to take her own life. And they believed that she was, in fact, murdered.
Yeah, that's a story that's been going on for quite a long time. People have investigated, and so there's been specials about it. I think I watched a couple on cable, but because of her, the nexus she was at with the Kennedy brothers and the mob, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, Richard, was Valentino associated with Harry Houdini at all?
Yes, oddly enough, they knew one another. Valentino actually was a pallbearer at Houdini's funeral in New York. and a few months later, of course, Valentino would die himself. So there is kind of a link there. Also, Valentino was a spiritualist. He was raised Catholic as an Italian might be at that era.
Yeah.
But he became very much of a spiritualist. And he went to seances and had spirit guides. He used to hold seances at his house and everything. So it's no wonder that people would think he would come back because of his belief system that he believed in. And so I believe that there is a link with Houdini, a lot of weird things about Houdini as well linked to Hollywood. Did you know he lived in Hollywood and made silent movies in Hollywood for several years before his death?
Houdini, you mean?
It was pretty weird stuff. And some of his movies, I've watched them, the silent films, they all feature such diverse things as reincarnation, stuff like that. It's all very metaphysical.
Whose film? Are you saying Houdini or Valentino?
Houdini, yeah. Of course, Valentino was pretty metaphysical, too.
Yeah.
And really strange stuff.
I didn't know about that. I'd need to look that up. I'd really like to find out more about that. And the other funny thing is Valentino's dog apparently haunts the graveyard there in Calabasas.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah,
his dog, K-Bar, or Kabar.
I actually went there with a group of psychics trying to conjure his spirit. And it was pretty weird. It was the strangest night I'll ever imagine. This lady kept saying that a dog was licking her ankles, but I didn't see any dogs or anything. But they claim to have seen K-Bar, the dog. Now, the dog has features in a lot of the interesting stories. K-Bar was this big Doberman he had.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend at the time, Pola Negri, made friends with the dog. And they seemed to be, he was the only animal that Valentino allowed to sleep with him. So on this big leather bed with black sheets and stuff was Pola Negri, the German-Polish actress, Rudolph Valentino, and the dog. So it was like a threesome, I guess. And oddly enough, Pola Negri got along pretty well. And finally, on the night Valentino died, the dog is set to have let out a loud howl and caused an accident on the road below, all kinds of problems. It's an interesting story.
Yeah, I turned the microphone down for a second because I thought there was something wrong with the Skype. Not to change the subject too abruptly, but you said something earlier about your students. Are you still teaching that ghost hunting course?
Oh, yes, I am, as a matter of fact.
Really?
I have a new class. I just started right now. In fact, I'm right now working up the next field trip, because the fun part of the class isn't just the lectures, but actually going out and using the knowledge in an attempt to investigate a haunted site. So I have three places in mind, and I just hope I can get the permission to go in and look into one of these particular sites and take the students along and see if they could help me find some more information.
I remember the one field trip I was able to go on was to the Olivas Adobe, and nothing really happened. But then I asked you, has anything actually ever happened here? And you, other people in the class asked you too, and you said, yeah, we had some pajamas or some sort of clothes jump off a bed and fly across a room. Has anything happened there recently?
Yeah. Oddly enough, we have... The Olivas Adobe is built in 1847, and a big family lived there.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of ghost sightings, but then they come and go, you know? That's what ghost hunting's all about. You can go to a site and nothing happens. You can't guarantee an event every time you go. And this is why I think the TV shows kind of do a disservice to ghost hunting. Because they show, oh, you go there, within the hour you'll have something happen. And that's that, but it's not how it really is. It's like many, many hours of boring work, and many times zip happens. As I always say, ghost hunting TV shows are a lot like cop TV shows. You know how the cops shows on TV, they solve the crime in an hour?
Yeah.
But real crime takes weeks and weeks of boring stakeouts and all kinds of stuff. before you get data.
Walter knows.
Capture the bad guy. And the same is true of real ghost hunting. It doesn't all happen in an hour. And we've gone to the Oliva Sedovia, had things happen. Now, I was out there, and we managed to get a really cool picture of a woman in a dress standing in one of the rooms. And she had her mouth open.
Huh.
And it was really pretty scary stuff because we got this picture. It wasn't an orb or a mist. It was very solid. And we had this this apparition. People felt touched. They also heard music, yet there was no music being played. So they heard a flute being played. They heard whistles. They heard a guitar being strummed. So we had some things happen recently. But as I say, sometimes, unfortunately, when you go, zip happens.
Does more stuff happen at night or in the day, or does it even matter?
What was that again?
Do more things happen at night or in the day, or does it even matter? Do you find it, just overall?
Overall, we get more at night than we do in the day. But ghosts come at all times. They come at day and night. I have found the best times to look for ghosts are between 2 a.m. and 4:30 a.m. That, in the dead of the night, where it's really peaceful, you tend to get more events happen. So, but do they show up in the daytime? Of course. Have I seen them in the daytime? Yes, I have. Have I had some of my most bizarre things happen in the day? Yeah. So, but then again, I'm out there looking for them and going to haunted spots and giving up my time and energy to try to find them. But it's that idea that they just happen at night with all the lights off. Well, that makes for good TV, but it's really not that accurate.
The getting back to the class, where are you teaching that? Is that at, where was that at? I think it was Ventura Community College or something like that.
Yeah, the Ventura Community College. That is a non-credit class, so don't get on the college for offering something as flaky as ghost hunting. And I'm teaching a class. I had several sessions. I'll be gearing up for the next session coming this Thursday. It's Thursday from 7 to 9, every Thursday night. And I'll be offering it again. I get some of my best stories. I get some of my best helpers. In fact, I met my wife in one of my classes I was teaching. Debbie is a gifted psychic, and she was one of my students.
I was going to ask about that.
What was that?
I was going to ask about that. I was going to say, did you meet your wife, you know, before the ghost thing or after? And the other thing is, since you did meet her in the class and you talked to her, you knew that she had some sort of psychic ability, I guess, when you got married.
Oh, very much. Oh, do I? Oh, I could tell you about that. Well, anyway, I did it after I began interested in ghosts. I started investigating, and I started teaching about, a year afterwards, thinking I could help get people to help me research. I wanted helpers.
Yeah.
And back in those days, this wasn't a common thing. Now ghost hunting is everywhere. But back then, there were only 12 ghost hunters in the whole nation, pretty much. Dr. Taft was one of them.
Yeah.
And myself and just a handful of others, Hans Holzer, a few others. Well,
yeah.
Rogo, I guess. I was teaching a class, and I got all of these different ladies coming in, each one claiming to be psychic. I'm psychic. You know, I got so tired of it. I put together a series of tests based on what I had read of the other parapsychologists had used at John Kennedy University of Boston, where they have a very active paranormal research department. So I got the tests, and I started to apply them to these so-called psychics. Most of them fell flat on their face, just didn't do it. They are what I call wannabe psychics. They think they're psychic. They like the title. They just can't do the job. And occasionally, I'd run across a real psychic, and one of them was Debbie. And I gave her the full test. She passed it. So I made up more stringent tests. She passed it. the test came in five layers, and only three people have ever made it to the fifth level.
Uh-huh.
And she got it. She got the fifth level. And it was so absolutely astounding that I invited her to go on a ghost hunt. I was invited to investigate this old Victorian home up in the Central California. And she came along. I found her invaluable. She was picking things up. She was getting names and dates of people, or you name it, that I know she had no way she could have researched it. She didn't even know where we're going.
Yeah.
And so I invited her again to another haunted location. And then again, after a couple of years, we got married. So, but living with a psychic, I could write a book just about that. There is no getting away with anything when you have a psychic wife. And we have two beautiful daughters and a stepson. And now I'm a grandfather. I have four grandchildren, two all girls, and I believe some of them have some psychic gifts as well.
Yeah.
Including my youngest daughter, who's three. She talks about her great-grandfather, Carl, visiting her. Of course, he died 7 years before she was born.
Yeah.
But she described him. And we never talked about Carl. And I asked, well, how does he come? And she told me, oh, it just comes right out of the floor and rises up. And she's never afraid. She just likes to play and talk with her great-grandpa Carl. And he disappears. But the weirdest thing, my youngest daughter was going down the hall to go to the bathroom. And she looked over toward the granddaughter's bedroom, and she saw the ghost of her grandfather standing there.
Hmm.
So we have confirmation from two sources about this very much family ghost.
Is this the same house that that man lived in, your father lived in?
Yeah, my father-in-law? No. It is. In fact, he lived
in
Nevada.
I'm sorry.
Across the city. And he lived up there, but he always said he wanted to see his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he got his wish.
Oh, so I didn't know that. There's a personal connection there, so I guess it doesn't really matter where the person lived or anything like that. I mean, like you said, it's individual, and it's not. It doesn't sound like mm-hmm. hauntings or. These kind of phenomena drop into any really set pattern. It seems to be all over the map.
What makes it so difficult is there isn't one pattern. It would be really great if all ghosts were just spirits of the dead or all ghosts behaved in one fashion. They don't. They're widely ranged different phenomena. So as such, each case has to be taken individually, studied, analyzed, and researched to try to get an answer to what it might be.
The daughter that saw her grandfather, you said your youngest, I guess?
Yeah, the 3-year-old and the 21-year-old,
okay.
My daughter saw it.
Okay, the 21-year-old is going to, is she still going to CSU Channel Islands there down in Camarillo?
No, right now she's studying art at the Ventura College.
Okay.
So she plans to transfer over there in the future.
Okay, because I thought she was going there. And as you know, there's still some buildings there they haven't finished converting over that used to be a very large, well-known mental institution there.
That's right. In fact, most of the buildings are still there. Some of them are still abandoned.
Yeah.
It is really spook central. I keep getting all sorts of bizarre and weird stories out of Channel Islands University. And the university does their level best to suppress the stories, not talk about them, even though the amount of events happening are just phenomenal. And you may even talk to Dr. Taft about this. He and I collaborated on an investigation there which wasn't quite what I would call legal. We didn't have permission to go there, but we went anyway. We figured the investigation was too important to let a little thing like rules get in the way of it. And he got some pretty interesting findings over there. I remember that night it was very, very cold. And well, you'll have to talk to him about that. I'm sure he may have been there several times afterwards. Right now, the college isn't as cuckoo about it as it used to be. In the past, they would just really, you know, suppress anything on ghosts. They're a little warming up to the idea today. And I think they've let some ghost hunters come and investigate quite recently, but that's needed. So.
Well, it's publicity for them. I don't see why they would, you know, unless they're some kind of giant scientific institution where they don't really want that around, which I don't think they are.
You get different points of view. Like, for instance, there was this one hotel that has all kinds of ghost stories in it. And I talked to the owner, and he said, oh, you can come and investigate. And he told me his ghost stories that he had seen people from the past. Well, I was going to go there with a team of people, and I was informed that the hotel had changed management, and they had a new manager, and she politely told me that there are no such things as ghosts. There's only the Holy Ghost. And she didn't want anything to do with the occult or with anything that was black magic or devil worship. So she threw us out.
Amazing.
Well, I talked to the people who still work there, and I asked them, well, are there no ghosts there now? And said, no, we still have ghosts. We just can't talk about it anymore because of the new manager or her beliefs.
So,
I'll respect her, and I won't take groups over there, but unfortunately, she can say there are no ghosts, but the memo hasn't reached the ghost population, and they're still very much there.
Well, she ought to look online. I mean, there's a large percentage of hotels that actively, and you know this, that actively promote their haunted status, and they use it to get business, and it works very well.
I even asked her about that, you know, that business could come. She said, no, I get much more business with weddings and religious groups who come to my hotel.
Well,
good luck.
If that's what she says, if that's what she wants, then it's unfortunate. But yeah, I went to CSU Channel Islands and ran around in some of those buildings myself. Not at night, though.
You know what it's like,
huh?
You know what it's like then.
Yeah, It was a day going into twilight, and before it got dark, I slipped back out. But at night, we were in the last building, all the way down at the end of all those buildings. I guess it's the furthest one south, the south building. And we were standing outside, and you know, there was nobody in there, no workmen, and we heard this pounding, like somebody was pounding on pipes. Just this rhythmic bang, 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 bang. It went on for the entire... It started right after sunset, and it just kept going. And when we left, it was still going. So I don't know if that was a heating system or what.
I've been in there. I've heard doors closing when there was no one there. I've heard footsteps. I brought in a team of people at one point, and we had this psychic who said he could cause ghosts to appear. He proved to be completely worthless. And we were videotaping the entire thing. I was next to the cameraman while we were videotaping. Here's this knucklehead going, come here, ghost. Come to me, ghost. I command you. Nothing happened. And then we reviewed the tape, because that's what you do when you do a ghost thing. You review everything.
Yeah, of course.
And after we were done, there he is standing there making a fool out of himself. And the cameraman was right there. I'm standing next to cameraman, and there is on the videotape audio track, there's someone whistling a little song. When I first heard it, I thought it must have been some kind of malfunction.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it was a tune. And I can attest, I was standing there. Nobody was whistling. It wasn't me. It wasn't the cameraman. It was this very loud, well-perceived little tune. And it's a haunting melody. I wish I could have captured that. I'd like to see if we could figure out what's the name of the song and maybe what era it comes from. Because, but that was one of the things that we had happen at that site.
Maybe it was a Charlie Parker song. I think he was incarcerated or whatever. He was institutionalized there for a little while.
Well, a lot of people were institutionalized there. In fact, some say that the Eagles song, Hotel California, is really about the Camarillo Mental Hospital, where you check in but you don't check out.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've also heard them say, no, it's about the music industry, actually.
Well, whatever it is, it's a pretty weird place, and I believe that in the future it will be called Spook U.
Where do you think, you know, this is a real stupid touristy kind of question, but if you want, you know, for your money to go somewhere and have almost guaranteed have some kind of paranormal activity, ghost type haunting activity, what place would you recommend? Anywhere in the world. I guess we'll do California too, but that you've experienced or know about.
Okay, best place for you to go in California, I tell this to my students, the Queen Mary at Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
And this is the rule. Don't go on the weekend. Don't go on the little ghost tour or the ghost special effects thing. That's fun, but it's just fun.
Yeah.
Go off the main ship, check into M Deck, one of the older cabins, and stay. And as soon as you go into your cabin, go to bed. Because you're going to get up around 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's where you should explore the ship. Walk all over between the hours of 2 and 4:30. And if you should encounter the guards, the watchmen, talk to them. Because they have the best ghost stories.
Of course.
And they'll tell you what they have experienced. And then, at that time, at that place, keep your ears open. You'll hear footsteps where there won't be anyone there. You'll see images. You'll smell things. I mean, seeing a ghost at that time, at that place, is almost normal. So I recommend that highly. If you ever get a chance, do go there. Also, another good place to go in California is all of the California missions.
Huh.
Every mission has ghost stories linked to it. So go and visit all of the missions. Also, a lot of the old adobes of old California, which are now museums,
mm-hmm.
many of them are ghost linked. So find those out. Another good place I found are really old hotels. The older, the better. Some of them have been turned into bed and breakfast establishments, especially in the gold rush country. And they have ghosts up the yazoo. So I would stay in them if you can and try to encounter something. Now, if you want to go all around the world, what is the most haunted place on planet Earth? For my money, the Tower of London.
Huh.
900 years of torture, murder, death, assassination, have left that place just ridden with ghosts. I was very fortunate to have some contacts, and they managed to get me into the Tower of London before it opened. And my wife and I got several hours to just wander through with one of the beef eaters, who was very much a fan of ghosts and such. And we had all kinds of stuff happen. So the Tower of London leads my list of haunted spots on planet Earth. So that's why I go to. Next place to go, and I haven't been there yet. I hate to say it. I wish someday I will. Maybe someday a rich man will give me money to do it. The Palace of Versailles in Paris.
Yeah.
Yes. All kinds of stuff have been happening there since 1901. I got a new story about a friend of mine who's a tourist.
Yep.
He was at the Palace of Versailles, daytime.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't looking for ghosts. He's a camera nut, and he loves to take pictures. And of course, it's an incredible place to take photographs of mountains and the restored palace. It's really great. he got this one spot. He got away from the tour group and was taking pictures. He was always lagging behind. And there was this room with a little velvet rope across the door that wasn't part of the tour.
Yeah.
And so he tried to arch his body in and take a picture. He couldn't do it. So he jumped over the rope, or I think he unlatched the latch, actually, and walked into the room to take his picture. And he was setting it up, and he felt something sharp touch him in the back. And he turned around, and it was a guy dressed in an 18th century white uniform with a tricolor hat, armed with a musket with a bayonet on it, and the bayonet was sticking him in the back. And the man said, in French, he said, "You're not allowed in here." And so, of course, he apologized profusely, grabbed his camera, and quickly left. And he thought, boy, that's weird. The guards, they dress them up in period costumes. Later, we found out there are no guards dressed in period costume. There was no plays, no movies being shot there that day, nothing to account for. He actually went to the security office and talked to the people. He said he even had a little welt in his back where the bayonet hit him. And it didn't break the skin, but it caused like a red blister on his back. So that was just a recent sighting. Huh. So this, I'd love to go there. I believe Versailles is a place where there is a psychic vortex where past and present come together, where ghosts are commonly seen. I think that might be the case. So I'd love to go there. I'd love to spend some time there. There's another spot in the United States with a psychic vortex as well. Now, that's the battlefield at Gettysburg.
Yeah.
A lot of people have had things happen at the Farnsworth House Bed and Breakfast, Little Round Top. My sister has been there. Unfortunately, I've never been. I'd love to go. In fact, I had an ancestor who fell on the second day of the Battle of Gettysburg. And my wife, remarkably, she had an ancestor who fell on the second day at Gettysburg. Only her guy was wearing gray and mine was wearing blue.
Right.
So they shot each other. But I'd love to go back there because I've heard it's one of the more haunted spots. At Washington, D.C., also is just chock full of ghosts. Even the Capitol and the White House has them. But if you can't get into the Capitol very easily these days, nor the White House, there's a place called the Octagon House.
Yes.
Which was the temporary Capitol under the administration of Madison after the British burned the White House.
Right, right.
And so that place is haunted by the ghost of Dolly Madison. I'd love to go there. And, of course, Ford's Theater, where Lincoln was assassinated, and the room where he died. I'd love to visit those places, spend some time in each of them, because I believe they're very, very haunted. Many of the battlefields of the American Civil War are haunted and were known to be haunted even during the Civil War itself, such as Shiloh, and Stone Mountain, all kinds of different battlefields, Chickamauga, all of them have a different phenomenon linked to them. There's also a bunch of forts that have ghosts, Fort Monroe and Fort Sumter, and Fort Mims in Florida, the Morro at St. Augustine, that fort is haunted. And, of course, there is a beautiful fort in Mexico. You know, Mexico has all kinds of ghosts in it. It's just chock full of haunts. There's a little island right off of Veracruz. And because that was the chief port for the export of gold, the Spanish fortified it and built a giant fort on this island to guard the city.
Uh-huh.
And that fort is chock full of ghosts.
That's
all kinds of people.
Sea of Cortez, right?
Yeah, no, it's off of the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, okay, it's a gulf.
On that side of the Mexican state, and it is. It was also used by the Mexican dictators as a place of confinement for their many political enemies.
Oh,
in fact, they had three horrible cells. The worst was just constantly filled with water. It was horrible. They called that hell. They had one a little better. They called purgatory. And one that was actually had some fresh air, they called heaven. And, but they were, and they are just chock full of different ghosts. People have heard moaning and seen faces appear in them. It's just, if I had the money and time, I'd like to take a team down to that fort and check it out. Many of the old missions are haunted, and different buildings are ghost-ridden. Of course, I don't know if I'd want to go to Mexico at the present time. They have a lot of
political problems into a ghost yourself.
They're working out. Yeah, more ghosts being made, unfortunately.
Well, they all seem to be connected with, as you said, with some, and people, most people know this, was some kind of place of heavy emotion. And then there's the idea that these places of heavy emotion, they're either a place that's an imprint or it's a place where people can see these things, basically see through time, I guess, to see these things that had a lot of emotional content in them and left either an opening or some kind of doorway, or, you know, there's the old idea of the recording playing over and over. You know, I asked you earlier, you'd say it's all these things.
I think that that accounts for a lot of it. Now, one thing I have found in all the 34 years I've been doing this, ghosts tend to be bundles of emotion. They're not logical. They do not think the way you and I as living people think. They're just bunches of emotional reactions, and it could be all the emotions, love, hate, revenge, what have you. They're all wrapped up in that their persona, which is an emotional, non-logical one.
That would make sense if you were that seems to be what causes things is and they live on emotion. If somebody's sitting there quietly contemplating some scientific theory, that's not going to cause anything. I don't think that's going to cause a ghost, but the emotions are there, and the emotions are the half of us that a lot of people like to ignore. So maybe there's some of that too, the repression.
I kind of think that ghosts also use us kind of like batteries. Every haunted house I've investigated, there are things going on with the families. There are being pulled apart, divorces, economic problems. These are not happy folks who have haunted houses. And I have yet to come across a family where, everything's just hunky-dory, and then all of a sudden this ghost happened. It's usually, if you get it down and ask them, they're saying, we've got this problem, that problem, all sorts of bizarre things happening. So there is some sort of a link between the living folks in a house and the spirits, ghosts, what have you, whatever you want to call them, exist there as well.
So if a ghost falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, then it's not there, right?
I tend to think you're right. If there's nobody in a haunted house, is it really haunted? Maybe there are no ghosts there. But then again, we're in conjecture. We don't know. I've talked to so many people who've gone to so-called haunted houses. No one lives there. They're driving by, and yet they see an image in the window.
Right.
Or someone on the balcony.
Well, then there's somebody there to witness it. So, you know, who knows? And if you left a camera or recording device there, maybe something would happen because there is, in the future, somebody waiting there to see what the result is.
That could be it. It could be we're somehow manufacturing something. I also found another terrible thing. Ghosts can and do drain the electricity out of batteries.
Yes.
I've seen this happen too often. I was on a show with Zach at Ghost Adventures. We went into this haunted room at the Mission La Purisima, and all of his cameras and some of his sound equipment, brand new batteries, all went dry. They just ripped them all off. We were at the Olivas Adobe where a little girl's ghost was seen, and this guy set up a camera to take a video of it. Low-light camera, the whole thing. As soon as she appeared, the battery went dead on his camera, so he got nothing. and other people tried to film the same phenomenon, again, the batteries would all drain. I talked to another ghost hunting friend of mine who was investigating a poltergeist in, I think it was in Rialto. And in this particular case, they were trying to videotape phenomena that every time something started, the batteries, all their cameras would go dead. In fact, they called me up. You know, I'm like the grand old man. And if you have too many problems, you know, if the vampire is coming for your throat, then you call me up, you know. It's like that kind of a situation. So they call me up, oh, what can we do, what can we do? And so I said, this is a solution to your problem. Ghosts can manipulate electronics. They cannot manipulate gears. So I told him to get a 16-millimeter camera, World War II vintage, with a big crank on it that you wind up, and then load it with a special film called candlelight film, which is very sensitive. It will actually pick things up in very, very low light. No, actually, candlelight, hence the name. Load it up with that, mount it up, crank it up, and then watch. And guess what? They actually got doors closing, plates flying, things in the kitchen happening. They actually were able to make a film record of what was happening. Whereas, you know, all the electronic stuff just won't do it. It's just worthless.
There's a story on one of your sites about the Queen Mary, and you said you've had a camera taken out of your hand, but you also said, because when you just said this about mechanical devices, you said you, your watch stopped. Then when they opened it up to fix it, they found out that the spring had been tied into a knot or something like that.
Well, that was not my watch. It was my wife's watch.
Oh.
In fact, I had just gotten it for her, and it wasn't an electric. It was a wind-up. And I spent a lot of money on that watch, too. It was completely ruined. That same time, I had a really good camera. I was taking pictures. Something pulled it right out of my hand and smashed it onto the floor. So was I being clumsy and slipped? I don't think so, but I lost a very valuable camera that way, too.
Was so, that between 2:30 and 4 in the morning, and or whatever, 2 and 4:30 in the morning? In the depths of the Queen Mary.
Oh, strange that you should say that. It was. And we were with some of the security guards, I remember, when that happened.
Do the security guards let you go into different areas of the, if you're, well, I suppose they'd let you because they know who you are.
Oh, yeah, we had a lot of fun. They were telling me all their stories about seeing a ghost girl running through the swimming pool area, and walking right through walls, and all kinds of bizarre stuff. The strangest story I got was one guard told me he saw someone riding an old-style bicycle along the decks. A bicycle? Where did this come from? And so all kinds of bizarre stuff is out there. I keep encountering it all the time.
Well, yeah, the reason I mentioned the watch is because you said it doesn't really affect mechanical devices. But then again, a 16-millimeter film camera is kind of a robust thing. It's a little more difficult to do than twist around a spring in a watch.
And plus, I don't think whatever was there really recognized it for what it was. And this, by the way, was a really old, like World War II vintage combat.
Yeah.
It could take a lick and keep on ticking.
Yeah, one of those.
And I saw the camera afterwards, after they had made their video. I wasn't there when that happened, when they made the film. But I get calls from all over the world, people saying, oh, I had this happen. Ghosts is following me home, or what to do. And I try to answer the questions as best I can. Here's a case I just had a while back.
Please, yeah.
I may have talked about it before. I got a call from a person who said, my place of business is haunted. And this man who used to work there died, and he was an elderly man. He spent his years working at this place. He's dead. Now he's coming back as a ghost to go to his office. And so I said, okay, I'll set up a team. You know, we'll get our equipment. He said, no, you can't do that. So what do you mean? So the place I work is a cemetery. No. And the owners are born again Christians, and they won't allow you to come on the site. So they said, what can we do? So how can I investigate why no one out in? And I said, well, what do you want? He said, we want to get rid of it. So what I told them to do is this. I said, go and build a monument to your dead fellow worker. Get pictures of him, obituaries, put up a cross, put up a little note like, we'll miss you, maybe even light a candle or something. Put it in his old workplace.
Yeah.
And which they did. And, in fact, the owner came and saw it, and he said, what's this? And he said, well, we missed our friend so much. Actually, nobody much liked him. He was a real bus budget.
Yeah.
He was a perfectionist. Didn't like him. Didn't want his ghost hanging around, though. And the owner was so touched, he let them leave this up. And the ghost was seen exactly one more time, coming in the front door, going to the back where his office was. He was never seen again. The theory is that the ghost didn't know he was dead. And so when he went and he saw the stationary monument and could read it, because he's in a different time frame than we are, staying still, he could read it, and he realized he's dead, and so he went off to where he's supposed to go. And after a month, they took down the monument, and no more ghosts. So that was another success.
All these cases you've told me about, and I think we talked about this the last time you were on the show, and probably in class, it's most people, when they see something like this, they experience a haunting or a ghost or whatever it is, there's not this sense of, you know, like you see in the movies where people's hair stands up and they run away and scream. It's more kind of like, and I think we came up with this phrase on the last show, stunned awe, when they realize what's going on.
That's the best description. In fact, I describe seeing a ghost kind of like seeing a natural wonder, like some kind of phenomenon, like the green flash, which people talk about, you know.
Yeah.
You see this, and you're sitting there while it's happening, you're amazed. Oh, that's one of those ghosts they talk about. Not frightened. You're just kind of amazed. You're watching. And then they don't last very long. Real ghost sightings are pretty short. And then when it's all over with, that's when people become frightened and start going, oh, I just saw a ghost. You know, but it's
Why do you think people, it's kind of an elementary question, but I think it should be answered by somebody who knows what they're talking about. Why do you think people are frightened?
Because they're faced with the unknown. You don't know what these things are. Is it going to attack you? Is it going to haunt you? Is it a harbinger of your own imminent death? Is it going to come back and strangle you? I mean, it's an unknown. Of course, you have a honest fear of the unknown, because you don't know what it's going to be. Now, those of us who studied it, we know that most ghosts are not harmful. Now, there are some that are negative and evil. They are a definite minority. Most ghosts are, in fact, far less harmful than real living people.
Yeah, and people should realize that. And that now that you mention that, what have you experienced, not just heard about, but what have you experienced in the way of people being harmed or you being harmed? Because that's what I used to think, that ghosts couldn't harm people. Then I find out, yes, well, there have been people punched and scratched and thrown and all that stuff.
I have never physically felt anything outside of something hug me that was ice cold.
Huh.
That's the only thing I personally have experienced. But I have been in the company of a man who was slugged in the face by a ghost. I saw him fly back, and I saw blood come out of his lip where it was cut. In fact, I even challenged the ghost, which is something I don't ordinarily do. I said, don't strike him, strike me. And I started to call him names, hoping that he would. He never did. But so I've been there. I've been in investigations where scratches have appeared. I remember we visited the old mission at San Miguel, where in 1848 there was a hideous massacre. And all these people, 13 men, women, and children, were killed. They were murdered. And they were gathered up by this gang, sent to this one part of the inn where they were at the quarters of the mission, where they were all killed, were bludgeoned to death and stabbed to death. I went there with my wife. This is when we were dating. We weren't even married yet. I told her nothing about the mission.
Mm-hmm.
She wandered through the place, and then she picked up on something terrible, said, I see blood everywhere, and she was immediately drawn to that one section where the massacre took place. And then all of a sudden, I looked, she was in front of me, I saw blood all over her blouse. And I pulled her blouse up, and there was a hole in her back, and blood coming out of it. I mean, not just a little bit of blood, but a whole bunch of blood. And it was, she said, someone has stabbed me. Someone has stabbed me in the back. And later on, though it ruined her blouse, the little place where the blood came out was almost nothing more than a little red spot. There was no sign of any kind of a real wound. I don't know what the heck that was, some sort of stigmata or,
yeah,
or what. I originally thought that maybe she had backed into a nail or something like that. I know she didn't have any sharp objects or that she would have stabbed herself. That's not in her makeup at all. But what that was quite amazing. And she was all better the next day, outside of her blouse, which was totally ruined.
Huh.
But, that's some of the stuff I've actually seen. But outside of that cold, icy embrace and the feeling of fear, I felt that a number of plays, something negative. I've never actually, thank God, knock on wood, been struck or injured or scratched by a ghost, at least not yet.
The blood that was on your wife's blouse, was that hers?
I believe it was. Now, I should have had it tested. I was just so freaked out about it.
Yeah, well, of course.
That this was coming out of her, and I could even see the exit point where it was coming out. So I pulled the blouse up and looked at it, and there was no accounting for it. If there had been a lot of thorns or something that might have caused it, that would be different, but there wasn't. It was a pretty sterile environment we were in. So it's just a weird thing. Strangest stuff I'd seen in my career.
Yeah. The other thing that you'd mentioned, which I mentioned to people, and it seems to freak them out, are black areas.
I've had that happen. Places that are so dark, you shine a flashlight, a powerful flashlight into it, you just see black. And I've had places like that where you get a flashlight, you go there through a room, and you flash through it, and you see all the walls and floors. Then you go in a second time, it's all black. I had something like that happen at Channel Islands University. I was at one of those old abandoned buildings and had something like that hit. Others have had things happen like that on the Queen Mary. A couple of historical buildings have had that happen. And they don't last. They're not there forever. They're just there. And you think, boy, that's odd. And then you come back, and you can see it all normal. But that black, it almost like it eats the light. It's really amazing.
Has anybody ever walked towards it?
I have heard of people doing it. I never have.
Well, it goes against what you'd want to do.
It's fascinating to see what they get.
It seems to go against everything normally somebody would want to do. I think that would repel most people. They'd want to get away from it as quickly as possible. But if somebody had the fortitude to actually shine the light and just keep going to see what happens, if they'd run into a wall or disappear forever, who knows?
Well, I don't know what it would be, but I can guarantee you when you encounter a ghost and it's there and you're there, all you've got between you and it is a flashlight, which is by now the batteries are giving out. They're starting to flicker. And getting yourself to go forward, but every instinct tells you to run away. That's the hardest thing you'll ever do in life. You almost feel like your feet are in lead, and you're trying to put one foot in front of another. But usually when I've had that happen, the ghost always retreats away. It doesn't really want to get closer to you. And they'll even go through a wall to escape you. So as the Chinese say, there's a saying that they have that ghosts fear men more than men fear ghosts.
Well, maybe we're lucky that way. I remembered something in an interview that came to me while you were talking about Channel Islands and that university there, and that it used to be the mental institution. I talked to Dean Radin many years ago, the parapsychologist. He said that, no, it wasn't even him. It was another friend of mine who was a clinical psychologist. He said that, or maybe it was Dean Radin. What he wanted to do was to, and tell me what you think of this, was to get a random number generator or some kind of very sensitive instrument and install it in a mental institution for a while, unbeknownst to the people that are there, and see if anything happened to the mechanism or the readings or whatever from it. Go ahead.
I will attest that mental institutions are haunted. And I've talked to many psych tech workers who all report seeing strange things happen. Doors close, drawers open and close, people behaving oddly. Some of the clients able to just say things that they shouldn't know, you know, give names and stuff of family members no one has told them about. Even doctors and nurses have complained of seeing and experiencing things. So I think the schizophrenics have a great deal of psychic gifts, actually. That's just my theory. And so finding these old mental institutions having ghosts, to me, is almost normal.
Yeah. Yeah, they wanted to see if it would affect the environment, the physical environment. I was also told of a study that was done in a published in something called the Journal of Neuropsychiatry, something like that. It was a study on military pilots and very sensitive instruments, and that how they would fail right at the most. They would all seem to fail right at the most emotion and tension filled part of a mission. And they were trying to figure out a way, and this is a story I heard a long time ago. They're trying to figure out a way to counteract that somehow, so that the instruments would keep working instead of somehow just shutting off right when they're needed most. It sounds almost like your camera and recording devices. I had another question about that. Do those things seem to start up again afterwards, or do they just drain the batteries and that's it?
That's it. The batteries are drained. They don't come back on.
Oh, okay.
And I have had so much of my equipment, so many, I would go in and get what I believe to be beautiful pictures, and then, you know, the film was all ruined or the battery's dead. I would take recordings, and then I'd find that the batteries had failed, and so I sound like Mickey Mouse trying to talk. You know, the speed had slowed down.
Uh-huh.
That's just something I've noticed, and ghost hunters all over the world will confirm that that's what happens.
Well, it would seem like that would be your ghost detector. If all your equipment starts failing, you've probably got some sort of phenomena you got to watch out for.
Yes, and that's why I think that you always carry extra batteries. Extra batteries is synonymous with ghost hunting.
Well, there's a question. I mean, if people want to ghost hunt, how do you think they would go about it? And this is forgetting what you see on TV and what they do and all the stuff that goes into that. What do you think is the best way for somebody to, I don't know, start doing this in a way that's useful, helpful, and would be fulfilling to them and others?
It's a growing hobby, but what would I recommend for people? I wouldn't spend a huge peck of money on equipment. You can get a lot of things for less than $100, a good K2 meter, a good tape recorder or digital recorder. They have a lot of applications that you can get for your telephone. I found them to be of dubious use, even though some people, I know one particular ghost hunter has gotten some great EVP using an application on his cell phone. So use some simple equipment. A camera is the best thing you can get. And go out to sites or join a little group. There are little groups all over. You'll be able to find one join with them and go out and do it. But the secret is to be respectful of where you are and keep accurate notes. If you're just walking around in the cemetery hoping to see a ghost, that's just thrill-seeking. That's not science. That's just fun. And but if you want to really take this up as a hobby, do it scientifically. Keep notes. Keep good equipment. Go to places. Compare notes with other ghost hunters. Read about it. Find your sites and see if you can duplicate what others have experienced. So it's a great hobby, and I encourage people to do it. Just be very cautious. Go with groups, and if you do get something, be able to have the wherewithal to share it. Even if you just post it online or put it into a magazine like Fate or something like that, or share it with radio programs like your own here. You could call in and say, yeah, I went to the Queen Mary. Yeah, I had this, this, and this happen. Something like this. Get the word out. Share the information. I'm a great believer in that. And in this way, we can develop this into a real science and not just a hobby.
Yeah, well, that's a good lead into another question. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think it's going to take for, I don't know what you would call it, the mainstream or the academics or however you want to call it, to accept this pursuit as a science or something that's worthy? I mean, I know that it kind of goes in and out of style, and some universities have it once in a while. What are all the ghost hunters working towards?
I don't really know. I think every ghost hunter has his own motivation. Some to confirm preconceived ideas, some to prove life after death. I think some are motivated by a desire for fame. Some people are going at it to try to make money. I mean, there's a lot of rationale and reasons for why people get involved in this stuff. I got involved in it because I saw ghosts. I wanted to find out what they are. I'm still looking. I haven't found an answer to that question just yet. I think that the TV shows have been a mixed blessing. On one hand, they've helped, because when I started doing this back in 1979, only 10% of the American people believed in ghosts. Now that figure is 48%. So it's been a great enhancement. People are more respecting of this kind of work, which they weren't before. So I think they've helped in that regard, but the bad thing is people watch the TV shows and they think that's exactly what ghost hunting is. And I have to say I really dislike what they call ghost baiting. Yeah. They essentially go to a haunted site and they yell, "I'm not afraid of you, here, hit me." It's not a good thing. And it may be great TV, but I don't think it's a way to really respect the ghost, whatever they are, or it sends the wrong message. And then you get a lot of knucklehead kids who watch the shows, and they go to a cemetery, and they wait around in the cold and dark, and nothing happens. So what do? They start yelling at the ghost, "Come out, come out, I'm not afraid of you." Then they start kicking over the tombstones, smashing statues. "Hey, if you won't come back, I'll break your angel here." "Oh, you're right, you're not here, I'm breaking it." You know, stuff like that. And it's gotten to the point where some haunted locations now won't let ghost hunters in because people have vandalized them in their attempt to get that thrill of seeing a ghost. So I tend to think that the TV shows have been a mixed blessing. It's made it popular, but I think it's sent out the wrong message to a lot of people. I think what's going to happen is the shows will eventually become old hat. People won't be interested anymore, and they'll all, like the game shows, they'll just become less popular and be gone. I think that day may come. And I have one negative scenario. I really hope this doesn't happen, that some TV group will get so desperate for ratings, they'll start cheating. They'll start faking things up, you know, getting a ghost to appear. And once they're caught cheating, all of us in this business will be tarred with the same brush. Oh, you're a ghost hunt cheater, aren't you? Yeah, it will all be blamed for one miscreant causing a problem. So that kind of thing I fear. I hope that doesn't happen, because like the game shows back in the 50s, remember, they caught them cheating, and they were all verboten. They just throw off the air. I'm afraid that may happen, and all of us will have to kind of build up from the ground floor once again.
Yeah.
And that will be okay. I'll still be out there hunting ghosts. I don't care if it's popular or not, if I'm making money or not. I'm still going to be out doing it because I think it's important work.
Yeah, it's that's the same fear people had about the Bigfoot hoax from a couple years ago, but they seem to be doing fine. That's the one thing people complain about with that and with the UFO thing is that, well, people are going to hoax it and mess everything up, and it's going to lose respectability. And what I keep saying is, I don't think it has any respectability, so it doesn't really make that much difference. You can go ahead and keep doing your research, but until something is just overwhelmingly obvious to the greater part of the population, or maybe more importantly, our belief systems and the way we go about gathering information and evidence changes, that's just the way it's going to stay. I'm afraid, and I think that's also, you know, I'm not an expert and I'm not a ghost hunter, but I think that might apply a little bit to the paranormal study and the ghost hunting too, that the respect is going to come when the society decides that it's somehow deserving of respect and not because they've forgotten about the hoaxers, I guess.
We have to work together.
Yeah.
That's the key. I went to the San Diego Ghost Conference last February, and though it was raining cats and dogs, I gave a great lecture on unity, how we have to work together. You know, we have to pool our resources, pool what we've gained and what knowledge. We shouldn't be backbiting and stabbing one another, and there's so much of that in the paranormal field today. People are to the point where it's rather disgusting in a lot of ways. And I try to say, well, okay, maybe somebody may not be totally pure in the way of their ghost hunting, or they're doing it in a different way. Yet these people all condemn what they have to say. If we can work together, if we can actually produce phenomenon, if we can gain insights to what happens in a ghost haunted site, I think that the public will accept us more as what we are and what we're doing as important. Unfortunately, my fear is the TV shows, all of this is popular now, but the public is very fickle, too.
Yeah.
One day, something new will come along. And, well, no more ghost shows. It'll all be angel shows, or it'll be vampire shows, or it'll be zombies, or any number of different things that people might become interested in. And all of this, what we're doing, will be just old hat and tossed aside.
Well, on the positive side of that, I think that part of the question I asked you about where you're going, I think you kind of answered that, is more cooperation. You know, maybe that you need to teach people how to see in a different way. Because the people I talk to on this show, especially people like you, Richard, is they're seeing things in a different way, and they're trying to find out how they can communicate that experience and that wonder and that curiosity, the healthy curiosity, to other people. And I think maybe that's the step that you might be working for, based on what you just told me now and throughout this whole interview.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. We have to see things in a new way and be open-minded. That's what I hate, is so many ghost hunters, they'll marry themselves to a theory of what ghosts are or how they are or what they're not. And yet they will marry into that theory and not even accept any other divergent theories or ideas about the nature of this phenomenon. So I think people need to be more tolerant of other ideas and other beliefs. I think they need to listen to what people have to say, even if they may not like them or agree with them. All these different things that are out there, we have to start looking at this as a science and not as a way to become famous or a way to get books published, but as something that will help the whole human condition.
Yeah.
And answer this, the great mystery, one of the last great mysteries in the world. What are ghosts? Do they give us proof that people live after death? Is this the answer to the age-old question, is the grave the end, or is it just a beginning?
Yeah, it seems like the belief system is the... It's funny that it's the same in any paranormal community, that the people that have, like you said, the rigid belief system don't realize that the people that they can't stand, the non-believer or the fundamentalist skeptic, you want to call it, are also part of a belief system, and the not being open, you don't learn. It just kind of, your brain atrophies, and you just kind of sit there for the rest of your life fighting off people who don't agree with you. So you're quite right. It's really incredible to hear you say that about the ghost hunting community. You know, it's just the same. There's no ruling body or anything like that, so anybody can say I'm a ghost hunter.
Yeah, and there's no so a lot of people like to use that term. Parapsychologist. I do not. In fact, I get suspicious. If you start calling yourself a parapsychologist, I want to see your degree.
Yeah.
I want to see what institute, not some paper mill who you pay $300 to, or you can be a parapsychologist or what have you.
Yeah.
But a real scholar. Oh, now there really are universities that really do grant degrees in parapsychology, like John F. Kennedy in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of them that do it. And unless you have that piece of paper, you have no right to call yourself a parapsychologist. It'd be like me saying, oh, I'm a podiatrist. You know what I mean? And unless I'm a real foot doctor, I better not use that term. So I call myself a ghost hunter, or more accurately, a psychic researcher, which is what I do. I research psychic phenomena.
Right.
Or ghost hunter, if you want to use that term.
Well, popular
but
term.
But I don't say something I am not, because I think that's disingenuous.
Yeah.
And I don't like to take on titles that I have not physically earned. I am a historian. I have a BA degree in history. So I'll use the term history. I can prove I've done it and I've worked in the field of history. I was very lucky to do that. But I don't call myself a ghost, anything other than just a ghost hunter.
Well, that's part of the reason why I respect you and wanted to have you back on the show. Is there anything else that I should have asked that you would like to talk about or mention?
Oh, of course. You can talk about my new book.
Yes.
Called Silver Ghosts. And it's about the ghosts of Northern Nevada.
Ah.
I lived up there for about 2 years and collected a bunch of ghost stories. I taught a class and inspired some locals to start a group called Thin Veil. And they continued my initial work investigating places. They've got psychics with them a lot. And I combined with them, because we're still keeping contact, and we put together this book of haunted places in Northern Nevada. We call it Silver Ghosts: Phantom Encounters of Haunted Places in Northern Nevada. I wrote it, and a psychic lady, Sandy Lene, we wrote it together. And it can be acquired on lulu.com. And I think Amazon has it as well. So you could check that book out. It's a really good book. I'm very proud of what we put together in that effort. And I continue to do research on this topic and many others. I also worked with another lady, a Chumash Native American. She's part Chumash and part Japanese.
Huh.
An interesting combination.
Yeah.
And she has written a book called Spirit Land, The Ghosts of the Central California Coast. And
huh.
It has a lot of sites in it. I'm featured in it, giving her a lot of information on different sites. That can be, I think, acquired to the bookstores that you can get. It's out there. So that book, it's in Shepherd Books. So you get it at info@shepherdbooks.com. And it's a publishing house. It's called Spiritland, Ghost of California's Central Coast by Avia Bell Moon. Avia Bell Moon. And she's a wonderful lady, by the way, and like many Native Americans, very psychic in her own way. And I've been very fortunate to work with a number of shaman and many of the Chumash people of the California coastal area, a very peaceful, spiritual group, if ever you want to find one. And of course, to them, one of their most sacred sites is the Ojai Valley.
So, yes, that's right.
Yeah, so it's an interesting people. So those are my books. Go out, buy them, read them. Tell me what you think about them. I'm working on new ones all the time. I'm trying to, a friend of mine has gotten some backers and wants me to put together a script for a TV show called Ghost Zone. And I don't know if that's been taken or not, but it's going to be the kind of TV show I would do rather than what they do. So whether or not people will like it, I don't know. Whether or not it'll ever be taped, I don't know. But I'm working on that right now.
Well, you can only push for stuff that you would want to do and see the things that you want to see. And I wish you the best of luck with it. And the fiction books are Flight of the Hercules and what was the other one? Adventures in the Age of Steam.
Age of Steam. Those are both of them steampunk stories. They're a lot of fun. I'm working on a new one right now, The Pride of Dixie. With a little luck, I can get it done and have it published so people can read it. As I say, it's inexpensive. Download them for 99 cents, so shouldn't be too hard. And I've written a bunch of other books that are still in print. Ghosts of the California Missions, you can find all over California. Also, Ghosts of the Haunted Coast, the Haunted Southland. And I'm working on republishing my a really great book that's out of print right now. It's called The Ghosts of Hollywood.
About, I'd love to see
ghostly
that.
Ghostly accounts in the film capital.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Richard, for being on the show again. And when another book comes out, or even before that, we'll have you on again. I had 20 questions here. I think I got through like 5 of them.
Well, you see, I've got to ask more questions. I know I'm a windbag. I'll talk forever.
No. Well, that's the way I usually, sometimes I'll get through the 20 questions, but if it's a really good interview, I'll only get through 3 or 4 of them because we just keep going and talking about other stuff. And then, you know, there's a back and forth with the guest, and that's really what I enjoy. So thank you so much.
Well, that's always the fun part of any interview. I've been to, you name it, I've been interviewed by them, you know. So it's always a good experience. So every time it's different.
Well, I hope this was different enough that it was enjoyable for you. And next time I'm up in Ojai, I'm going to give you a call and force you to let me buy you lunch or dinner and take me around Ojai there.
Oh, well, it won't be hard to force me into. Anyway, Ojai's a great fun place. Santa Paula's got a lot of ghosts, too.
So yeah,
there's
Santa
so
Paula,
many different things out there.
Yeah. Santa Paula is where I go and buy aviation fuel for my ultralight, so I'm there quite a lot, too, actually.
Oh, the airfield has its own ghost, too.
Really?
Including the actor Steve McQueen, who had airplanes there in Hawaii. And he may still be checking back.
Well, here's a whole other set of adventures and questions I have to bother you about. So I will do that in the next few weeks or months because, like I said, I'm up there all the time. I go flying in Santa Barbara every week. So I'm up and down through there constantly.
Well, I'm glad we had a chance to chat tonight. I can tell you some of my opinions on the paranormal and push my books. Hopefully people will buy them.
All right. Well, this will be up within a day or so at the website, and I'll also put links to the books and your information.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Richard, and I will talk to you soon, I hope. Very enjoyable, and you have a great evening.
All right, and your next show with Dr. Taft is going to be fantastic. He's a great guest. You're going to love it.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too. And when that's posted, maybe I'll send you an email to remind you, and then you can listen to it. Or you can listen to it live next Sunday from 8 to 10, just like you were this time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll
All
see
right.
you then.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. What fun. I was going to ask him if... you're on there, Walter. I don't know why you didn't... I thought you might want to jump up and say something. You
He's a talker. You don't need to... What I like about talkers is they go. And you don't have to prod them too much. I mean, you got through only 5 of your 20 questions, like you said. So I what's great about guests like that is they go.
I wasn't complaining. That's why I told him, if it's a fun guest... I don't almost ever get through all the questions.
Oh, they're the best
kind. I put so many questions up because I know that because I don't want to have to run out of stuff to talk about, and I never have. I mean, everybody that I've had on has been on for, I think, the exception of one person it was your science fiction author. I think he was on for an hour.
Yeah, Ian Sandry.
Yeah, that's the only one. But the rest of them, I know it's somebody I want to talk to and talk about stuff. And I know him because I took that class with him. I mean, Richard's not a personal friend of mine or anything, but I know him outside of just talking to him on the show. And of course, you do because you're his publisher of 2 books now.
Yes. Hopefully 3 when he attacks that steampunk ghost story.
So we'll be back next week with Dr. Barry Taff. You interested in that, Walter?
Yeah, if I'm supposed to be coming back from out of town on Saturday, so
if you're interested, he's like Richard, except even more intense.
Well, yeah, particularly when you consider the entity.
Yeah, yeah, he's the entity case guy, and the funny thing is that what you think you know about it, he will disabuse you of your bad impressions of the entity case are wrong because the movie was very, very loosely based. So we'll be back next week with Dr. Barry Taff. Here's a song which I play. What is it?
And everybody have a nice Thanksgiving in between now.
Oh, yes.
And then.
Yes. Have a very nice, safe, don't stuff yourself too badly holiday season. And we'll see you after the craziness of that. Here's Mostly Ghostly by The Creatures, which I've played many times, but I thought it was a good one. Thanks so much for listening. Radio Mysterioso. We'll see you next week.
He finds himself endeared to a girl who's kind of weird. You see, she's mostly ghostly. Up and down my spine, a new sensation crawls. Fastly, ghastly, the way she floats on air and walks through walls. Indeed, she's mostly ghostly. Try to kiss her and she'll vanish into gloom. Mighty, flighty, it's hard to say just when she'll reappear on a broom. Other girls I've known were simply dipping, just another standard pretty face. But this one haunts me so, I daren't let her go. It's so thrilling, really chilling, when we share a brief embrace. Because she's mostly me.